Can we first start by asking the secretary of the committee for any apologies?
Thank you, ma'am. The apology that I have is from the chairperson of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mufumla. Honorable members, I think on the agenda we have one item. That is discussion on the public hearings that we had as a portfolio committee on the bill that is with the committee. And we are going to have to go through the submitted verbal discussion and written submissions from the public. And then we have to go through them, analyze them, and see as to how is the public taking the bill. And I'm going to call upon the committee researcher and the content advisor to take us through the submissions. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. I think the purpose really here is to provide some kind of a summary of what transpired during the public hearings. Further to that, members will remember that the committee was invited to a roundtable by the Community Law Center and the network organizations, which the researcher and I attended, which actually took further the discussions on, you know, which emerged from the public hearings, some really interesting thoughts that came out of that. So we thought we should share with you what the picture that is emerging, but on top of that, allow the researcher to really take through the committee on some of the important issues that have emerged. And we by all means, we're not going to try and, you know, replay the public hearings, but we're just going to highlight the issues that emerged. So out of the 32 responses that were received by the committee, I mean, not all of them were able to come to Parliament. Some organizations could not come, but the committee did receive oral presentation. And I tried to, you know, find key themes that are emerging, and there's a summary which has been circulated there, which shows that there are issues around, you know, the public, members of the public are raising issues around the constitutionality of the bill. They are raising issues around, public participation in sort of two various levels. You know, the transitional arrangements, the setting up of the municipal planning tribunals and the appeals process, and the whole issue around the powers and functions, you know, at provincial and at a national level. Also, the national and provincial interests. So those are the broad issues that I think they emerged. They have details which are in the presentations itself. And this is, we regard this as the first stage of engagement with this. A lot more work still has to be done when we do, you know, clause by clause deliberation on that, which I believe that the researcher and I will work together in terms of showing, in terms of chapter one of the bill, these are the proposed, but this is sort of a summary that is emerging. So with the one issue, okay, the first issue that came up, this is around, you know, clarifying what national and provincial interest is. Let me not read this summary, but raised issues around the fact that the jurisdiction of the spheres of government, that is the point that was raised, needs to be clarified, carefully examined, because some of the submissions have suggested that there is no consistency, and people required a clear definition of what constitutes national and provincial interest. A particular question that came from one of the submissions was that what are the triggers of a development application to constitute national and provincial interest? This is one issue that came up, and it came up during the public hearings, but during the roundtable discussion, there was also a lengthy discussion where people were showing that these are still questions that the bill is not responding to. in terms of public participation and public consultation, okay, the first thing, like I said, there were people who raised concerns that there was no meaningful engagement between the department and the submittee, you know, members of the public. You remember some people raised that we did not even get feedback, or we got it at the last point, so we did not get enough engagement. But on the second level of, you know, public consultation and participation, it is with regard to, the point was particularly raised when we looked at the communal areas and also members of the, you know, traditional communities. Some, in terms of, I think, clause 23.2, it makes reference to the participation of traditional councils in terms of Municipal Structures Act and the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act in the processes of development, preparation, and adoption or amendment of land use scheme by municipality. And the argument that emerged was that participation of communities in their own development and on their own terms must be emphasized, and it is not coming up very, very clearly in there. We do know that there are a whole lot of sections that speak about participation of the public prior to adoption, approval, and adoption. So what people were saying is that even in terms of development of the land use schemes and the special development framework, we should have an opportunity for members of the public to participate at that level, not when everything is finalized. I think this is the point that the committee may want to, you know, further, you know, engage along that. I mean, there's a view that there are traditional communities at this present moment who are not part of traditional councils in South Africa, whether they are recognized in terms of the leadership, the Traditional Leadership and Governance Frameworks Act is another thing, but the strong view is that you need to really engage with these people who do not fall within the traditional council. And what came to mind is also a number of, you know, communities that are organized around communal property associations and trusts, you know, who are on land acquired by, you know, under land reform, who may not be part of any traditional council. How do you engage with those, you know, people? But as I said, there are different, you know, different sections to make reference to that. To go further, okay, just before I go, there's also somewhere in the memorandum, which I think it was the end in terms of parliamentary processes, where the bill speaks about the state law advice that said that it may not be necessary to refer this bill to National House of Traditional Leaders in terms of a section 18.1A of the Leadership and Governance Framework Act, based on the fact that there are no provisions pertaining to customary law or customs of traditional communities. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not very clear about this, but I thought it's something that the committee may want to engage with state law advisors, with the parliamentary legal advisors, and the department as well, in terms of the impact on this in allocation of land in traditional areas, in communal areas and areas under traditional councils, where allocation is in terms of customary laws and practices, but also in terms of decision making on these kind of land which is being used under, you know, customary practices. So it's something that I thought perhaps we may need some kind of discussion and clarity around this, or whether perhaps that clause has no standing at this particular moment in the current version of the bill. The next level of discussion was around the whole lot of issues around planning tribunals. I'm not going to dwell on that, but one of the key issues is the appeals process. Members will remember that there was a, you know, lengthy discussion around this issue where, you know, certain people felt that you need an independent sort of tribunal, the participation of councillors, politicians. That is summarized in the document that I've circulated. There was also an agreement around transitional arrangements in this current version of the bill were sort of not enough, and it is something that the committee may also want to engage and discuss this. The last point that I would mention is exemption of certain kind of uses, and what comes to mind is issues around mining and also the presentation we received from organized agriculture, which motivated for a need to protect prime and unique agricultural land in the interest of food security and the right to food and water as a national priority. So I'm raising this point because they are sort of, in my view, they capture what emerged from the public hearings. But I'm going to give the research an opportunity to go through, if time permits, to go through the chapters and raise, in terms of chapter one, what did they say? In terms of chapter two, what did they say? As I said, this is the first level of engagement. When we come to clause by clause, we're going to do more work to really document with the detail that is in the submission what are particular proposals and what needs to be changed. Thank you.
Good morning, members.
Good morning.
I'm going to talk to the paper lists some of the comments and recommendations that were made by the public during in the written submissions and during the public hearings on two issues in the bill. My colleague, Mr. Manager, has already talked to some of the key issues. I'm not going to repeat what he has already done. I'm just going to focus on the proposal, some of the recommendations that they have made in terms of those key issues. And I should point out, which is the recommendation that are here are just a sample of some of the recommendations. As manager said, we're going to sit down and do a cross-by-cross presentation, where we'll say in terms of clause one, this is what the public recommended. But here I'm just talking about the few that came. In terms of consultation, the feeling among some provinces and municipalities is that they should have been involved in the drafting of the bill and not just to be consulted to comment on the draft. Their belief is that they are actually the implementers, they have been involved in this in doing this for a long time, and they could have added more value if they were involved during the drafting process. And there was another comment from, especially from small municipalities, that more time is needed for meaningful participation, especially in small towns and cities. And the department does not need just to consult further; they need to get also their views on the issue of public participation. And there was a feeling that the bill should facilitate participation and meaningful involvement of communities. Of rural committees themselves. In terms of, there was also a comment from SAG, the South African Institute, yeah, where they said the bid, actually, because there are so many things that a person should do before actually getting his or her application accepted. It increases the cost on the applicant, and so they suggested that the department needs to take a cost review exercise of planning on the applicant, the impact of the actual deal on the applicant. And then there was also an issue, as Manager mentioned, that there was a concern about the constitutionality of the bill. In terms of that, it seems like the national government or national parliament is making legislation on issues that they feel are of municipal planning. And I said one of the recommendations there was that in the bill they need to be clearly defined the responsibilities and roles for national, provincial, and local government in terms of planning. And then there was also there's also a view that the bill is silent on land tenure and land use in communal areas. And one of the proposals was, in order to address this case, the bill must provide guidance. capacity to integrate land development and land tenure across different spheres. And the other proposal was that the bill needs to give guidance on how provincial legislation will deal with land use management in areas of falling under traditional authorities. And lastly, there was that in dealing specifically with the issue of land reform, it was suggested that special development permits should consider land release and acquisition. And then there was also a concern around the alignment of the bill with other laws. In dealing with the issue that there are various laws dealing with planning and development, one proposal was that there should be one piece of legislation dealing with special planning and development. This implies that all laws that relate to planning and development should be repealed, and then there should be one piece of legislation. And this recommendation is based on the recommendation that was made in the white paper on special planning and land use in 2001. And the other proposal is that the bill must include references to other laws impacting on land use. Instead of repealing those ones, it can also just make references. And then there was also a feeling among other presenters that the bill is not in the right place within the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And they thought the correct place that it belonged to was the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, and that was based on the argument that the bill deals mostly with the issues of municipal planning, so that's why it should be in that department. There was issues of definitions. There also a recommendation within the presentation in terms of definitions, what definition that needs to be included and what needs to be expanded. On the issue of intergovernmental support, the public thought that due to the challenge of capacity among municipalities, the bill should allow for function to be gradually transferred to municipalities. It was actually said when we made that recommendation. You know, that's the recommendation. And the other recommendation was that the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform must conduct municipal capacity assessments to ensure that the necessary capacity is developed to implement the provisions of the bill. And in terms of the presentation that Sandy made the other day, I think he said that the department is actually starting with this process. And the other proposal that support should be provided if requested by relevant local authorities, or if it is clear that it's not in a position to deliver on its obligation. On the issue of conflict, the recommendation was that conflict and dispute resolution between departments and between the three spheres of government could be adequately addressed by the Intergovernmental Relations Act of 2005. And then there was also a feeling that the bill is actually intervening in the functional areas of municipal one of the issues that was raised was that because the bill is actually prescribing norms and standards in terms of how the municipality should establish SDF and also who's supposed to be in the municipal tribunal. So those things are there. And then one suggestion was that the bill should establish development norms and standard boards comprising representatives from state and private sector as well as professionals that was coming from society in terms of how instead of the minister doing himself prescribing the norms, there should be a body that deals with that. And then another suggestion was that when an application involves matters of national and provincial interest, both the spheres should join only as part to the decision instead of taking decisions. It was in terms of the provision, I think, let me see. The provision 18 Oh yeah, clause 52.5b. It says that when an application involves issues of national interest, the minister may decide on the application. So they say that should not be the case. The minister should join, not make the decision. The other recommendation was that the national monitoring of municipalities should be done through provincial government, and it is required in terms of section 139 of the constitution, and not the national government bypassing the provinces. Then, in terms of chapter 4, special development framework, there was a suggestion that only municipalities should produce SDF after consultation with other spheres, not each sphere producing its own SDF. And there was also a concern that the bill actually also prescribes how to establish the SDF. Whereas also in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, there's also a prescription how to establish SDF, and then the public proposed that instead of the bill actually repeating or contradicting what it is in the NSA, the bill should actually just refer, align it with NSA or refer to NSA in terms of establishing SDF. There was also a concern in terms of reviews, and they said because it says in the bill that every 5 years there should be reviewed SDF, and the public felt that is not feasible, because it actually even to start to making SDF may take more than 5 years, and the suggestion was maybe the review should happen after 15 to 20 years. And the suggestion was that to ensure alignment of national, provincial, and municipal SDF, it is recommended that there is a need to have an SDF guideline. So we should specify how the alignment between these three spheres is going to be done. In terms of mining, there were views from the mining camp as well as the other organizations. In assessing the impact of mining on natural resources, it is suggested that clause 12.1N should include that cognizance should be taken of the significant impact of mining on natural resources, and therefore extra measures should be put in place. The other recommendation was that the rezoning of land for mining purposes should be subject to strict scrutiny, and especially consideration should be applied to such applications. This is to ensure that a consideration is taken before it is whether land use can be changed for mining use in order to protect prime agricultural land being rezoned for mining purposes. And I think that was also raised by other essays. And then there was a proposal from Royal Bafokeng Nation that a provision should be made within the bill that rural communities on communal land to be allowed to participate in issues concerning the development and use of its land, particularly in relation to mining operations. Then there were proposals from the Chamber of Mines. One of the proposals was that mining as a national interest should be elevated to the ministerial level, and all applications relating to mining should be submitted to the Minister of Mineral Resources of Mining. Mm-hmm. And then the second proposal that all land development applications should be submitted to the Minister of Mineral Resources because they have potential impact on mining. In terms of land use schemes, one proposal was that provision should be made for rural communities on communal land to participate concerning the development and use of its land, particularly in relation to mining operations. And then there was also an issue around time frames for reviews of land use schemes, which the bill says every 5 years. The one suggestion was that reviews of MSSDS should be at least in every 10 years instead of 5 years. And, the bill should contain provisions to deal with situations when land use schemes are not reviewed. That it should be enforced that what happens if the land schemes are not reviewed by a specific municipality. And the other problem is that a person who is actually designated by municipality to consider and determine authorization of land use should be someone who is qualified and has the appropriate skills to do that. And then in terms of content, the issue was also to include health and safety legislation within the land use scheme and also the issue of food security as one of the issues that affects us to be promoted when use and development of land is determined. On issues of Agasa land, there was a proposal that the Minister of Agasa, Forestry and Fisheries should be consulted in all decisions relating to productive agriculture land that was coming from us in SA, and also that prime and unique agriculture land should not be subdivided, as because there's already an act that deals with subdivision of agriculture land. So that should not be part of the bill. On the composition of municipal planning, which is chapter 6 of the municipal planning treatment, it was proposed that it should be discretionary, not mandatory, for municipalities to appoint external members to be part of the municipal tribunal, because it's actually the responsibility of municipality to prescribe who should be part of the tribunal, and also it will mean an extra cost for municipalities to pay the extra money for the external professionals. Then the proposal that the bill must be amended to give municipalities a choice to have the power of deciding on land use applications with municipalities' specific portfolio committees, or if they wish to have another planning tribunal. The other proposal was that tribunals should only deal with appeals while the municipal council deals with application. And it is believed that it will actually reduce the cost, because if tribunals are only dealing with appeals, then there's no need for them to meet regularly and then getting to be paid for that. Instead, it will be the municipality or officials who deal with application. And then the other issue was that in terms of membership, the bill should make sure that the top non-state members should not await municipal officials in municipal planning tribunals. Then the other issue that was raised was around time frames for applications. On the issue of time frames, one view was that maximum time frames for processing applications should be specified in the bill. However, they also believe that there should be different time periods for different applications. For example, if the application is received by the dedicated municipal official, the decision should be made within 3 months of receiving the application. But if the application is received by the municipal planning tribunal, the decision should be made within 5 months of receiving the application. And there was also a proposal that there should be within the enforcement provision made for those one who do not keep up to time frames. The other view which actually contradicted the first view was that the time frame for deciding on applications should not be regulated. Instead, it should be dependent on the circumstances for each approver. On the issue of engineering services and development charges, the definition of engineering services that needs to be expanded, because it doesn't include the private roads. And also there was a belief that this provision should actually be discussed within the treasury, because it involves impact on the financial legislation. On the issue of apples, there were a number of proposals. One proposal was that there should be inter-municipal appeal tribunal consisting of officials from different councils. The other proposal was that provincial planning appeal should be appointed to decide on all appeals. The third proposal was that independent tribunal of persons within qualification in professions like planning, engineering, land surveying, environment, management and law should be established to deal with appeals. The other view was that appeals should be left within the discretion. Who should decide on the appeal should be left within the discretion of municipalities. And there was also a provision in Clause 55 which says that no right of appeal unless an applicant can approve a right that has been adversely affected. And then the feeling was that provision should be deleted. In terms of exemptions, there were within the land use schemes. One suggestion was that tenure upgrades or processes to obtain title to existing tenure rights should be exempted from provisions of the bill. Another proposal that land use for essential services should be exempted from the bill. That suggestion was mainly coming from ESCOM. And the other was that services that are offered by state-owned enterprises should be listed as of national interest and therefore exempted from the legislation. In terms of regulation, there was a feeling from all present that they should be involved with in making comments in terms of regulation. On the ease of transitional arrangements, since Chapter 5 and Chapter 6 of the DSA have been declared unconstitutional, the public felt that any provision in the bill that is suggesting use of these two chapters should be deleted. Instead, a provision which states that the DSA applications that were approved prior to 17 June 2012 be dealt with and finalized in terms of the bill should be incorporated. And the other recommendation was that the existing rights should be dealt in terms of the town planning and township ordinances of 1998, in which rights will remain in place for a period of 15 years. And the other suggestion was that before the bill is implemented, an adequate transition of period of 3 years is required to ensure that all processes or requirements completed before it becomes implemented. Then the last one is on repeals. The comment was that there are a number of pieces of legislation that are regulating planning and development which are not repealed by the bill, and that creates parallel processes and confusion, and actually undermining the objective of the bill to create uniform and integrated special planning and land use management system. The suggestion was that the government should identify all pieces of legislation that are currently used to regulate development planning that might need to be reviewed. that's the end of it. And I think those are some of these proposals the committee should consider when they actually deliberate on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. This is an opportunity to engage with what the submissions are saying, but we must bear in mind that the department has to come and respond to the submissions themselves. So I think they are waiting outside, or they are not yet here, but we are expecting that they be in a position to come and respond to the submissions. But in the meantime, can we interact with the presentation by the researcher and the content advisor? Mamungwe Nyamabila, Honorable Trollip.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I don't know whether I will be out of order, because while the content advisor and the research has been able to do something for us to simplify the comments, I don't know whether we have got the legal advice of Parliament, because when dealing with the bills, we're supposed to have the legal advice of Parliament, which will be responsible to advise the committee accordingly on the issues, especially the proposals that has been raised, so that we don't depend on the legal advice from the department. So if there's a legal advice, I think before maybe comment, he can also be able, or she, if she's available or he is available, to highlight some of the issues before we engage on the issues. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you. I'm informed reliably that there is a legal advisor. There are legal advisors that are available for us here. Is it the feeling of the members that we take the route? I think it's the correct route, so that we are clear on what we are doing as a committee. Can I request that the legal advisors take us through the processes, and from there we'll engage with the submission?
Thank you, Jane, honourable members. My name is Theo Hercules, and I'm here with Sisa Makabeni and Nitumbi Mkisu. We're from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. We're not representing the Office of the Parliamentary Law Advisor's Chair. So I just wanted to make that clear. But if there's issues that maybe we can assist the committee with, we are available to assist the committee with those issues. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm told that the parliamentary legal advisors are available for us. She's here. I think the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm here to note all the issues, and then we are going to go back to the office and put them down in writing as to what the legal position is from the legal services office. So I am here to note all the issues.
Are not able to take us through.
Oh, no, not at this stage. I would rather give you something comprehensive in writing, because they're quite complex issues and we need to do some research regarding some of the matters.
Can you identify yourself, ma'am?
Yes, sorry, ma'am. My name is Sue Ann Isaac, and I'm a parliamentary legal advisor.
Oh, there is this, honourable members. On the issue, honourable Tapani.
Chairperson, I think really it would be fair if they were not given these submissions before they came here, for them to go and look at them and then respond after having taken possession of the submissions that are contained in these documents. Otherwise, if they were given before they came here, this is irresponsible really of the law advisors. But if they were not given this, I think really it would be fair to give them just to go and go through the document.
Can I give the secretary to explain the process for us?
Thank you, Chairperson. This paper is only meant for members of parliament, members of the committee, to engage, because these are the summaries of the submissions which the legal advisors, they are in possession of. They've got the submissions with them. They can respond on what they realize or what they have identified from the submissions, not the ones that have been identified by the support staff of the committee. Thank you.
So, are you able to respond?
Just sorry for the confusion, ma'am. We wouldn't be able to respond right now. My colleague, Mr. Bernara, was in the meeting previously, and he's the senior legal advisor. He has picked up certain issues, and I need to discuss it with him and before we give you something comprehensive. As I said, the issues are quite complex, and we would rather give you something in writing and give a considered legal opinion
so the committee can have something that they can look at and apply their minds to.
Your hand was up, but what I'm told is that this is a session where members have to go through the submissions themselves, and then the parliamentary legal advisors will come at the next round to be able to guide us through the bill itself. Honorable Trolley.
Thanks, Chairperson. First of all, I think these reports are very helpful. These summaries are helpful. I think by and large they represent an overlapping of the issues that were raised last week over those 2 days of submissions. And the state law advisors and the parliamentary law advisors, you know, could take note of some of the issues that we will raise, some of the issues, for example, that I would like to raise. First of all, the first issue that I'd like to raise is that we do need clarity on what support from the department means, which brings me to the main question of whether we should be dealing with this legislation ourselves or in conjunction with COCTA, or whether COCTA should actually be dealing with the legislation. That's the first question I'd like. For example, Chair, when I went to speak to representatives from the Western Province about this bill, I took my colleague from COCTA because it has direct implication on COCTA rather than with land reform and rural development. So we need some clarity on that, and maybe we as a committee need to consider whether when we progress with consideration of this legislation that we do so in a joint committee, because I think it would be futile for us to go off on a tangent excluding a department that has a very fundamental direct role with the implications of this legislation. Chair, the other issue that came up in this summary and also in the submissions was interspheral encroachment, and the legal advisors must certainly look at that, because apart from interspheral encroachment, we need to get clarity on alignment of legislation, existing legislation, legislation to be repealed, when will it be repealed, when does the this proposed legislation become, when it becomes an act, what happens to any existing or archaic legislation really needs to be tightened up, because many of the questions in the submissions deal with that. I'm very concerned, Chair, also that in this document done by the researcher around the summary, is that the proposal column might reflect that these are proposals that we as a committee make, because some of them I think the committee could easily align themselves with. Some of them are actually proposals made by people who made submissions. Now, we can't endorse the submissions of presenters as our submissions. So we must just make sure that we tidy that up and make it clear that it's not a portfolio committee's proposal or recommendation. For example, the issue around jurisdiction of mining and the Minister of Mineral Resources. Now, we're really talking about a third department being involved in this legislation, and I think very definitely what came out in the hearings and the discussions was that we're very loath to make mining an exclusion and to give mining an exclusive right to determine land use with regard to mining. So I don't think it's a very good idea for us to even be considering giving some jurisdiction to the Minister of Mineral Resources with regard to this legislation. Chair, my next question is around the time frames. I think it's very important that legislation or regulations of legislation very definitely make recommendations about time frames, because this legislation is aimed at improving the environment for economic activity to take place. And if we don't put time frames in, people whose applications for development are being held back have no recourse or to litigate against a department or an official that's not considering those applications. So I think it's very important that we do have, in the regulations at least, some time frames. And then the legal advisors must definitely give us clear and concise advice about how this proposed legislation interfaces with the Municipal Systems Act, especially around appeals and tribunals, etc. And then lastly, the transitional arrangements. Chair, the transitional arrangements are something that only the state law advisors can advise this committee on. And it's already almost too late because we are in a transitional stage because the DFA has been declared unconstitutional. And we are in a transitional stage and we have a bit of a lacuna. So we need some legal advice on the current status and the status going forward if this legislation is passed.
Are you done?
Thank you, ma'am.
Honourable Mandel.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe for me it's just an issue of clarity and just getting more information around the issue of the National House of Traditional Leaders, because it says here it is not necessary to refer the bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders. And I'm just thinking in terms of communal land and land that resides under traditional authorities, what happens to it if they are not then going to be privy to looking at the bill? If I can just get information around that, how the legal team recommends that this be seen through. Thank you, Sha.
Any other comments? Honorable Ngwenyamabila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, was just my apology for being ignorant. I don't know the tagging of this bill, because when talking of this public participation, I think if it's Section 76, it must go to, I think, the provinces. I think that will strengthen the public participation is one of the concerns that is raised on this bill. But also to say that maybe if the legal advisors can just check for us whether the Traditional Governance Framework Act doesn't facilitate, doesn't strengthen the, in line with this bill, it doesn't strengthen the community participation through the establishment of these traditional councils, because one of their responsibilities is to look at the developmental issues in their various communities. Then the other one, Chair, where it talks about the department, the COCTA is an appropriate custodian. I'm not sure of this one, because I think that is the concern that we keep on raising, that land issues should be accommodated by the Department of Rural Development. But if, you know, we split these things to other departments, but when looking at the bill, it talks about the consultation, that if there's a mineral issue that is being raised, then the national minister must consult the relevant ministry, so that when the decision is taken, it is a joint decision that is informed by both the views of both the ministries. Yes. Then the other one is on the issue of this review, because I don't understand if the comments are saying it's not feasible that each and every 5 years there should be a review, whether the proposal of 10 years. Can you check 5 years vis-a-vis the 10 years that is being proposed for the review of this SDF? Then the other one is on the issue of this, the issue of agriculture, whether again it is not being covered, because when looking at the bill, it talks of consultation, you know, consultation with the relevant ministry. If it's an which is related to agriculture, the Minister for Rural Development must consult, you know, the Minister for Agriculture. So whether is it not covered in the bill? Yes. The last one that confuses me most is that one of the tribunal. On the other side, they are saying that a councillor should be part. Other side, municipalities don't have the capacity, you know. Then the number, because there was also an issue of the number of the members of the tribunal, if I'm not mistaken. There was that concern that the number, because when looking at the bill, it says the minimum from 5 to more. Then they are saying the number, the 5, is not... maybe if you can just check for us the minimum vis-a-vis the maximum, because if they are saying they are not compatible with the number of the board members, then which one can be feasible? Then on the issue of the expensive cost effectiveness, because when looking at the bill again, can you check for us the support? Because it talks of the support that must be given by the ministry to the provinces, although it is not specific, if my memory serves me well, it's not specific what type of support that must be provided. But whether that doesn't, the issue of cost effectiveness, the support that will be given is not going to be human and financial support. I think that also will be covered in the regulation. Issue of fair and reasonable cost, because according to me, that one is going to be covered in the regulations. I think the minister must be specific of the amount that is supposed to be paid vis-a-vis again the time frame as indicated by Member Trollip, that there should be specific time frames on all these processes. I think regulations, Chair, whereby it says that regulation should have been made available in parallel with the bill. I think that one, I don't know whether I misunderstand the processes, because the bill, after the bill has been passed into an act, then it's the responsibility of the minister to come with regulations. But it is no bill that has been tabled in parliament together with regulations. But what we need to just check is that the minister must fast track the drafting of the regulation after this bill has been passed, so that there should be no vacuum, you know, and also there should be effective implementation of this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Any other hand? We are okay. I think this was meant for the parliamentary legal advisers, so that when you come to respond, then you come taking the position that members have put in place to respond to all what they've raised up to now. Then, is the department outside?
While we're waiting for the department, do any of the representatives from Parliamentary Legal Advice Office and the State Law Advisors have any comment around some of the issues that we raised?
I see the Parliamentary Legal Advisor shaking her head, so I think it that she doesn't have anything to respond now. Can the other group respond?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Members, we've noted quite a few of the issues which the Honourable Members have raised. We have, when we considered the bill with regard to the traditional compliance with traditional frameworks act, basically, and we have given the opinion that it's not necessary to refer the bill to the council, because the bill in essence deals with land for that matter, and the object of the bill and the application of the bill as such does not really deal with the customs issues for the matter as required in terms of the act. So that was the basis of our opinion. If there's anything that the committee wants us to reflect in that respect, you know, we are prepared to look at it from that. Any concerns that the committee wants us to look at and respond to, we are prepared to look at those things. Of course, the constitutional deadline, you know, is now passed, so we have to look at the transitional provisions and just reflect on that, and then also in consultation with the department, then come back to the committee with proposals in that respect. With regard to the review, time frames of 5 years, I think they've used the electoral cycle as a basis, the department indicated the last time, but that is also something from a policy perspective maybe to look at, and I'm sure the department will also guide the committee as far as that is concerned. With regard to authorizations required in terms of other legislation, the bill is drafted in a sense to make provision that that when other authorizations or compliance is required, that it must be taken into account by the municipality for that matter. So we have provisions in the bill that actually deals with section 29 is also an example where consultation with other land development authorities is required. Then there's also the alignment of authorizations in clause 30 of the bill, where provision is made for separate authorizations, integrated authorizations. So there's also a process as far as that is concerned. So if there's, once again, we're also prepared to guide the committee and to assist the committee with regard to, you know, if we talk about agriculture, talk about mining, the bill is drafted in such a manner that the compliance must be met with regard to other pieces of legislation. We talk about the NEMA Act with regard to mining authorizations. Those authorizations must be complied with, as you know, in the manner that the bill is presented to the committee at the moment. So, from an interpretation point of view, we're also prepared to assist the committee with that regard. I think that small is that we are prepared to in a position to respond to at this stage. We also reflect on the submissions from the researcher and on the issue. Any additional issues, we are prepared to assist the committee with, and amendments, and with the department as well. Thank you, Chair members.
Thank you. I think the department is in can. Are you able to come and respond to the submissions? We are in your hands. You can just take us through the submissions that were entertained during the public hearings. Anyone from the department can take us through.
Chair, I'm just not sure whether we should do the presentation or the longer. I don't know how much time we have. We sent in our response to the comments yesterday, but we also have a shorter presentation. We just be guided by yourselves.
The committee secretary is saying she did not receive anything from the department.
Apologies, Chair. We probably sent it quite late to our office in Cape Town, but we have copies here. And we're just saying that there are two documents. We have a more detailed response to the written comments made to the portfolio committee. Yes. And we also do have a PowerPoint presentation of about 10 slides. So we're just saying that we want to be guided in terms of time. So that we do not, because if we're to go through the 30 odd pages of the full responses, it requires some time, but we can also do the shorter PowerPoint.
I think we have time because we need to do justice. So we have until 1 o'clock. So it's your time now.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I will then look at the departmental responses to the issues raised to the committee on the bill. We have attempted to summarize in the bigger document. I just want to check how many pages there are. 31 pages. The 31-page document, what we've attempted to do, Chair and honorable members, is to summarize the comments that were sent to the portfolio committee and attempted to provide some responses to them. The first comment we dealt with was the one from the city of Johannesburg. The city raised issues around the preamble to the bill. The city of Johannesburg said that the preamble should be shortened. Our response is that we do not think that there is need to shorten the preamble of the bill. It attempts to explain and to give context to the issues dealt with in the bill and to put it in a particular context. So we do not think there is any need to shorten the bill. The city of Johannesburg also said that some of the issues in the definition section requires clarity and rewarding. Apart from one or two instances like the definition of earth and a couple of other that we think may be strengthened, Chair, honorable members, what we want to suggest is that we only re-examine these definitions when we look at the draft regulations. We have already concluded the draft regulations and that. Hopefully in the next coming days, like next week, we should release it for public comments. But what we are saying is that we cannot use the definition section to explain everything. There are other instruments that would do that, but we're willing to re-examine those details of the definitions if so required and make recommendations to the portfolio committee when you look at clause by clause of the bill. The city of Johannesburg also raised issues around the application of the bill. They raised a question as to whether or not there is need for provincial legislation on this subject. Actually, it may be important to just put a context to this. The policy position informing the Special Plan and Land Use Management Bill is contained in the White Paper on Special Planning and Land Use Management of 2001. Based on the research done by the Planning and Development Commission from 1997 when it was set up to the Green Paper that was published in 1998-1999 and the White Paper on Special Planning and Land Use Management, the position of government had been that we will have one national law to rationalize the plethora of laws in this area. Based on our engagement with different spheres, with different stakeholders in the past 10, 11 years, it has since become apparent to us that whilst the first prize will be one national law, the way the schedules to the Constitution are arranged, we may not be able, even if we wish to stop the provinces from making legislation on the same subject. So to that extent, it is correct that we have gone back on the White Paper promise that we will have one national law and no provincial legislation. So to that extent, the question that the City of Johannesburg is raising is that why do we need a provincial law? We need a provincial law because of the fact that there are little differences among the provinces, how they wish to address certain things. Provincial planning is a matter within the provincial competence. To that extent, they may also legislate on the same subject, just like we have the authority to do. And also, some of the laws that we require to repeal are actually laws that have provincial effects or old national laws that have been assigned to the provinces. So to that extent, it is also necessary for provinces to legislate on this subject. City of Johannesburg also raised questions whether municipalities who are bound by these laws will have the option of choosing between provincial laws and national law. Though it's not officially stated in the document, I think some of the challenges out there, especially that we encountered in the course of consultation, is the fact that I think throughout the public hearing, it became apparent that there is a bit of tension around how do you allocate or how are the powers between the three spheres distributed on this subject. So you may listen to certain people who will say to you that nationals overstepped its powers, others will say the provinces are having too much powers, or depending on which province you listen to, they may say that national has taken too much powers or we have given too much powers to the municipalities. But what is apparent is also that some municipalities are of the view that they rather obey just the national law and not just have complementary provincial laws. Indeed, some of the comments that we received on Schedule 1 of the bill points to the fact that some of these municipalities are claiming that we're inviting provinces to legislate on matters that are essentially their competence. So there is a tension around why they should have both provincial laws and national legislation on this subject. But it is not a question of whether a municipality will choose between provincial law or a national law, as City of Johannesburg phrased the question. In reality, the scheme that we have proposed and we think is supported by the bill itself in the application section is one which we have a national framework legislation supported by provincial laws, but those provincial laws must be consistent with national law on this subject, and we do not see that provinces will create parallel processes. Rather, provinces will make laws to fill in those areas. I think clause 10 of the bill is very clear on those areas in which provinces may make laws, and it's either those areas where we haven't made laws ourselves or where provinces are those things that are within provincial competences. So the response to that is that many provinces are preparing their pieces of legislation. It will comply with the national legislation. Regulation of special planning and land use management will be at all the three levels, and we hope that this bill will have assisted in bringing that consistency between the how the three spheres operate in this regard. The City of Johannesburg also raised comments that there is need for more clarity around the roles of national and provincial sphere. In this bill, we have attempted, apart from what you have in Clause 10 and Schedule 1, and one or two instances where we said that provinces should do provincial special development framework, we've attempted to stake away from prescribing what provinces should do or how provinces should do what they wish to do. What we are proposing, clause 10 of the bill, is to state the principle that provinces may legislate in a manner consistent with this piece of legislation and the intergovernmental frameworks legislation on certain issues that is found in clause 10 sub 1 of the bill. So the question around whether we can clarify more on the powers of national and the powers of provinces, we do not believe that this bill can be the avenue to start defining and further defining. One of the things we have done in this bill is to state, I think in clause 5 of the bill, the categories of planning and what we feel is within the purview of provincial planning, what is within the realm of national planning and municipal planning, and that's clause 5 of the bill itself. I'm just responding to the query around special planning systems. It's also been raised by City of Johannesburg that there is likely to be confusion around SDFs when all the three spheres and the possibility of having a regional SDF is introduced. They are saying it's not practical. We do not necessarily agree with this contention because national SDF will effectively be a special representation of how the national government sees the use of space at a national level. So whilst we are all looking at the same piece of land, the national SDF is more of a national expression. We've had a national special development perspective in the past, and it is at a different scale from when you look at the provincial special development framework. Indeed, many provinces have got growth and development strategies. A few provinces have got provincial special development frameworks at the moment, but the level of detail contained in each of these differs. A municipal SDF is more detailed, is more local, and we do not see the confusion. These are policy documents, and we feel that each sphere of government is entitled to express its policy in a special form via the SDF. So we do not agree that SDFs at different spheres will lead to any confusion or lead to any impracticality. Already we have guidelines for SDFs at municipal level, and we also have a unit that deals with special coordination to ensure that you do not plan within a municipal space without looking at the impact on the adjoining municipalities. So we have a few tools to deal with the question of alignment and integration of spheres, even within one's alignment and integration of special plans, even within one sphere. But across the spheres, we'll continue to engage within the spirit of intergovernmental relations. We're not dealing with levels or tiers of government here. We're dealing with different spheres. And what we're saying is that there will be robust engagement around these SDFs as opposed to seeing them as necessarily possibly contradictory. There are questions around time frames. I think there is almost near unanimity amongst all the role players in this environment that the time within which a planning decision is taken is very crucial. A developer who wishes to undertake investment in any land development is keen to ensure that development decisions are taken properly. We note with concern ourselves that even as far back as 2003-2004, we've been engaged with National Treasury concerns around our planning regulatory environment inhibits development. In some areas, you will see that it will take anything from 18 months to 3 years to actually get a decision either to site a mall or some of those things. So there is a general consensus around the need to address time frames. But what we are saying is that we cannot, in a piece of legislation, some people have urged us to say that, why don't you say that the planning decision must be taken within 180 days? It is not so clear-cut and easy to do like that. We do agree that there is need for time frames. We do agree that we need to improve the efficiency of the decision-making processes so that you do not necessarily have an environment where an investor is hamstrung by lack of efficiency in the system. But what we are saying is that we need to be more nuanced in the way we introduce time frames. We need to look at it on a case-by-case basis. Even in land use management, there are different types of applications. There are applications for consent, for rezoning, for there are very simple applications. There are different scales of application, depending on the size of the application. So we cannot have a one-size-fits-all in terms of time frames. Hence, we are saying that the authorizing provision is both in the principles and in the bill itself to enable the minister to impose time frames. But we also think that the regulations, the way we are conceiving them, will assist us in doing this nuanced approach to impose in time frames. City of Johannesburg is also saying that we should introduce norms and standards. The bill authorizes the minister to make norms and standards on a range of issues. And they are saying that this should be supported by research. We fully agree with the City of Johannesburg. Indeed, it is not practical, it is not possible and wise to do norms and standards without doing research. There are a lot of work that we're doing internally to look at norms and standards in different areas. So that when you say, for instance, that in terms of land use, for every population of 50,000, it's ideal to have a school, or for every primary school, it should not be more than 1 kilometer to a primary school for those within the catchment area. The reality is that 1 kilometer in a rural space where the topography is different will be different from 1 kilometer when you're in the city and there is efficient public transportation. So when we do norms and standards for land uses, we need to also look at the issue in a more nuanced fashion. Hence, we're doing quite some good research that will assist us in then introducing different norms and standards for land use, and we agree with the City of Johannesburg in this regard. There is a concern around national and provincial support and monitoring. They are saying that it is unclear how this support and monitoring will be carried out. They also say that the bill overregulates municipal SDFs, which are already dealt with in terms of the IDPs provided for in the system. Right? I think the question of support to municipalities or support to provinces is not one where we can be very mechanical about. There are different tools and instruments that we will use to do support and monitoring. I think the Constitution itself imposes on the national government to do support and monitoring when it comes to certain mandates of other spheres. What we have proposed, of course, I think Chapter 3 of the bill deals with intergovernmental support, and we're not necessarily looking at a one-size-fits-all big brother approach to saying that municipalities must act in a particular way. We recognize that some of these things fall within the competence of municipalities, and provinces also have a duty to do their provincial planning. But what we're saying is that in order for us to be able to report on what others are doing, there is this element of monitoring. At a technical tools level, one of the things we've been doing over the years is settlement growth patterns, for instance. And a settlement growth pattern would simply do a time series to say that if you take the city of Cape Town, between 1994 and 2012, over a period of time, how has the city grown? Have we integrated? How have the poor people, are they coming to the city? Are they living? How have we built low cost in relation to with the proximity between work and work and home, for instance? Those kind of studies, those kind of monitoring are not necessarily intrusive or overstepping of people's mandates. It's essentially to be able to assist and feedback into things like norms and standards. It's essentially to assist us in then sharpening our policy instruments to say that if we have all agreed as a nation to promote integration, if we have all agreed that we need to do special justice, how are the policies that we've been doing over the years? If you take a policy like the inclusionary housing proposed by the Human Settlements Department, we all know, right in this country and internationally, that if you do a simple rezoning exercise that says that this is the density for that you allow people to build in that area, and you know very well that practically for people to build according to the land use zoning that you've done, it will require you a minimum of 5 million rand. You can also conversely say to yourself, how many people are earning 5 million to be able to build there? You may unwittingly, via zoning, exclude poor people from living in a particular area because you've zoned the land to a particular category. And when we talk about monitoring of municipalities or monitoring of provinces, I think at national level, we want to see a national picture to see what impact of migration, what impact of pro-poor policies are, and those kind of issues. So the monitoring are not things that can be fully spelled out in a piece of legislation such as this. But we're saying that these development principles will guide us to do certain things. We will do norms and standards to do certain things, and we will then put in measures in place, not necessarily a mechanical ticking of box reporting approach, but probably qualitative research that would then assist us in saying that how have we improved on the use of our space, how have we redressed the party settlement patterns, and a couple of things. And if that thing, how it's unclear how this support will be offered. I think at the moment, in this year alone, we're supporting about 50 municipalities in doing their SDFs, practically funding those SDFs. We have guidelines on SDFs. We're doing some things on special information that will provide GIS to municipalities. But we can go into that detail. I think the presentation will prepare a list of projects that we can share with our honorable members as to how we practically support, how we practically seek to understand what municipalities are doing and some of these things. There's a concern around the question of provincial interest. I think we all agree that provincial planning is exclusive competence of provinces. Provinces themselves would define what is in their provincial interest. It is not for us. It is just for this legislation, and that's what we've attempted to do in Clause 10, I think 1B, to say that provincial legislation consistent with this legislation may provide for matters of provincial interest. We cannot say more than that. We cannot necessarily, and I think the tension is around the fear as to one other sphere encroaching on the mandate of the other sphere. The question of reviewer of SDFs, and I think it goes for land use schemes also, has been raised by the City of Johannesburg. We've already stated that SDFs are longer-term visionary documents. When you look at the standard SDF of a municipality, it looks into a 10, 20-year horizon of what the space within a municipality should look like. It proposes certain interventions to deal with the question of spaces and places and people. But what we're saying in the bill is that once the MSA provides for IDP, and technically in terms of the MSA, the SDF is still part of the IDP, it did not say that we cannot regulate SDF. Indeed, the Systems Act expressly makes a cross-reference to the Development Facilitation Act, inviting that SDFs must speak to the principles in the Development Facilitation Act. And to the extent that my minister is still charged with this responsibility over the Development Facilitation Act, which will then be replaced by this piece of legislation, the provisions of this bill goes into the detail of what an SDF should deal with. We have proposed a five-year review period, and we still stand by it. A review, a municipal SDF today, many municipalities have developed SDFs in 3 months without proper consultation. In terms of our guidelines, it probably takes about 10 months to develop a municipal SDF. We do not think a review will take you a month or between a month and 3 months, and it is not a very expensive exercise. Most municipalities barely spend $500,000 on a municipal SDF. We do not think a review will cost you $50,000 to $100,000. To the extent that governments, the electoral cycle is 5 years, we think our elected representatives should be afforded the opportunity to review whether the SDF accords with the policies upon which they've been elected from time. On the on appeals, the City of Johannesburg also raised questions around appeals. And on the slide we have presented, and I don't know whether we should not project that shorter presentation, there are quite a number of issues we must talk about appeals, and some of these things are even reported elsewhere. In terms of the bill, we are saying that a municipality is the primary land use regulator. All applications in respect of land use matter must be submitted to a municipality. A municipality has two principal ways of considering land development applications. It must set up a municipal planning tribunal and then decide which matters must go to the municipal planning tribunal. Secondly, a municipality may decide that officials within the municipality may consider certain applications. Probably smaller applications that are consistent with the policies adopted, but the decision as to which applications goes to the full tribunal of the municipality or to certain officials within municipalities must be determined by the council itself. Council, on the other hand, will approve policy documents. The policy framework within which these tribunals decide or within which officials decide land use applications are based on the guidance afforded by the council. And I think the bill has stated that much. What we have said also is to look at Section 62 of the Systems Act and to look at the kind of criticisms both from the courts and the practical implementation challenges that have occasioned the implementation of our Section 62 of the Systems Act. To then say that appeals from decisions of the municipal planning tribunals or from officials mandated by the council to take decisions must lay to the executive authority of the municipality. And what we are saying is that even though the appeals will lay to the executive authority of the municipality, the executive authority will naturally be advised by its lawyers, or it can also set up a different unit to assist it to deal with appeals. We propose that we sharpen the interface with on the appeal processes, but we do not think that we can allow a situation where in some municipalities at the moment, because they do not have structures to deal with land use decisions, there is no form, there is no procedure. And in some municipalities, you simply talk to the municipal manager that you want to build a mall, and they sign it. There is no formal process. Hence, we're saying that every municipality must have a formal process to deal with applications. It must be investigated, it must be dealt with properly. Hence, we're proposing that the municipal planning tribunal should consider applications. On the question of appeals, there are quite a few concerns around whether we should allow appeals to the executive authority as we have proposed in the bill. There is also the question of provincial tribunals sitting on appeal over municipal decision. There has also been issues around whether or not these appeal tribunals are sufficiently independent or whether the executive authority will be sufficiently independent. Our position is that this is a power that belongs to the municipalities. We are not aware that if a function is essentially a provincial function, appeals lay to national government. So we do not concede that it is legitimate to take the decision from a municipality to a province if it is a matter exclusively within the powers of a municipality. So to that extent, we have not catered for appeals to provinces. We recognize the powers of provinces to legislate, and what we are hoping is that provinces will legislate in a manner that gives effect to the powers of municipalities to do municipal planning. On national interest, what we're saying is that we can write so much about what amounts to national interest. What we have provided for in clause 52 of the bill, and what we have done also on the advice of the federal advisors, is one which seeks to strengthen section 52 to ensure that the minister, in dealing with applications that affect national interest, does not do so in a manner which is inconsistent or in a manner which is administratively unfair. We recognize the possibility that when you say that municipal planning includes the power to take decisions, why then do you want to allow the minister to take care of certain matters? But the reality that we also recognize is that in certain limited applications, there are matters of national interest. And there are many examples that we can cite. We can cite nuclear power stations. We can cite matters which affect our defense and security. We can cite matters which affect foreign interests. And a couple of things. And we're saying that some of these interests, you can give examples, but they may not be so easy to determine. And Section 50, Clause 52 of the bill attempts to deal with the question of saying, at a conceptual level, what comes within the bracket of national interest. But what's significant is that we have circumscribed the power of the minister. We first said that the minister must exercise this power consistent with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. We're also saying that the minister, in the exercise of this power, must publish beforehand a set of criteria to guide in the implementation of this section. We will be glad to report that as a department, we are commissioning an exercise which seeks to define the powers of the minister in respect of national interest matters, and that we will be publishing guidelines in this regard. It is not something that we can publish as guidelines as part of this bill. We think that this bill is essentially to keep the broad authorizing provisions. And the research we are commissioning will then assist us in saying, in this kind of situations, in this kind of scenarios, and within these kind of boundaries, the minister may exercise the power to invoke national interest in respect of land use matters. we will then in those guidelines be able to further guide municipalities on when they can refer certain applications they have received to the national minister, or on those grounds, which grounds upon which the minister may call in an application that is already before a municipality. But I think the principle is that in terms of this bill, all applications will go to a municipality. National interest applications are very limited, very rare, hopefully, and unusual powers that will not be exercised when the minister wakes up and decides that they're interested in a mall that is being built in a small town, and the minister will decide to intervene in that kind of application. We hope that the criteria that will be subject to public consultation and participation will assist us in fashioning out guidelines that will guide the minister in exercising these powers. On the question of our provision of engineering services, I think one very important issue in municipal exercise of land use powers deal with the question of development charges, internal engineering services, external engineering services, site and service as a precondition for land use. I think we are very cautious in getting ourselves to areas where we turn this bill into a money bill, where we then talk about matters that may lead to the imposition of levies and charges. Hence, we know, and we've discussed with the municipalities, and most of the provinces are well aware, that National Treasury itself is busy developing a policy position on the question of on development charges, and it will have impact on the question of provision of engineering services. And municipalities will then be able to exercise powers in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act to further deal with the stated issue of development charges, including how it relates to provision of engineering services. There is also a concern, maybe a last concern from City of Johannesburg, that we have not adequately repealed all laws that will assist us in cleaning up the environment here. We concede to that concern. Indeed, we've been pointed to a couple of national pieces of legislation like the BCDA, the Black Communities Development Act. We've been pointed to Lefty. Some people have even pointed us to other land reform legislation that have land use implications and said we should repeal some of these laws. We will at the appropriate time possibly consider repeal of Lefty. I think the Black Communities Development Act is following a slightly different process on its own. But what we also want to note is that we are well aware that all the 9 provinces are busy with different pieces of legislation on this same subject. Many of the pieces of legislation that further compound the problem in the area of land use management are pieces of legislation which belongs to the provincial spheres of government. These are the old ordinances, and some of these laws are national laws which have been assigned to provinces. If you take the Removal of Restrictions Act, even though we are repealing the national part, the Removal of Restrictions Act have either been reenacted in a province like Gauteng, or it's been assigned to provinces. So we cannot complete the repeal of laws until the provinces themselves complete their law reform exercise. As a department, we are funding the development of provincial pieces of legislation in 5 provinces. We're in advanced discussions with Northwest. We're in Barikan again tomorrow to discuss with the province about how to scale their efforts in bringing a new piece of legislation in Northwest Province. Western Cape is at a very advanced stage with their piece of legislation, and they will be repealing all the laws that are still in this environment. I think KZN is probably the best because it has already done the repeal. In Northern Cape, we're also working with the province to ensure that they do their provincial piece of legislation. But in this bill, we will not be able to see all those laws being repealed because the National Parliament will not have the competence to repeal provincial pieces of legislation. And as we have said, the provincial legislation, they form the bulk of the legislation that are the confusing and the plethora of legislation that we need to clean up in this area. Saldanha Bay Municipality, they raise the question of constitutionality. I think it will not be for us to deal with constitutionality or lack thereof. I think the state advisors are better placed to do that. Safe to say that we have certification for constitutionality from the state advisors. Our own limited reading of the constitution of the cases also points to the direction that we will have confirmed and complied with the constitution. We're not aware of any overstepping of the constitutional boundaries in this regard. There was questions raised by Saldana Bey on the question of 5.1c, and clause 5.1c of the bill deals with the question of categories. Categories of spatial planning and what is municipal planning. I think what is being said in 1c and 2b, 2b deals with provincial planning, while 5.1c deals with municipal planning. I think we must agree that it's been a very complex exercise to attempt to prescribe where the limits of each of the three spheres of government are with regard to spatial planning and land use management. What we do not agree with is that we can define these powers exclusive of each other to the extent that national, provincial, and municipal spheres all operate on the same parcel of land. I think the practical question is, how do we adopt very flexible yet constitutionally compliant policies to ensure that we do not encroach on each other's mandates as we deal with the question of spatial planning and land use management? And when we give examples of mining or of agriculture, it will show that the intersection of the interests of national, province, and municipalities on the same piece of land. But I think what this bill has then done is, how do we all play without encroaching on each other's mandate? So we do not agree with Saldana Bey, though we are conscious of the kind of concerns they do have. What they are suggesting is that we might have unwittingly, through clause 5.2b of this legislation, given the provinces power over municipalities in respect of municipal planning. It's also interesting to then note that some provinces have also accused us that we've given too much power to municipalities at the expense of provinces. That's the kind of challenge we've been dealing with. Saldana Bey also raised questions around development principles and norms and standards. I think they pointed to 7, I think, A3, which deal with the question of special planning mechanisms, land use schemes. I think some of the concerns raised by Saldana Bey, whilst they are valid, are not things that will be fully addressed in a bill. I think if we're to write, we cannot write the old SDF itself or the guidelines. The guidelines for SDF that we've published as a department itself runs into over 100 pages. We can only give the core principles of what we wish to achieve. And I know it's not just Saldana Bey raising the question that if you really want to do special restructuring, how has this bill given practical effect to all those lofty intentions? They've raised the question of they agree with the principle of good administration in clause 7E, but they are saying that this will be hamstrung by by lack of capacity and financial resources. As a department, we've actually upscaled our support to municipalities ourselves, but we do not think that all these things are just questions of financial resources or capacity. I think it's also willingness and probably more hard work on our part to look at more robust means of ensuring that we implement this bill in a manner which assists us in improving the efficiencies in the system. Norms and standards. They are asking whether we will consult with municipalities. The bill in clause 8 states that the minister, after public consultation, everybody wishes to see their sphere or their organization listed here. But when we say public consultation, we can certainly give undertaking that in every instance when we do norms and standards or we do guidelines or we do all these things, it will be published in the Gazette. We will certainly workshop it, and the municipalities will not be left alone. So the fear by Saldana Bey that will the municipalities be consulted on the question of national norms and standards, I think it's absolutely so that we will do that. Alignment of land use schemes and special development frameworks. The challenge in this area is one where it's the actual linkage between special planning and land use management. The white paper on special planning and land use management makes it very clear that at a strategic level, at a policy level, politicians, we need to all have a view of the use of our space. Land use schemes, on the other hand, deals with almost micro land development rights as it pertains to land parcels. Some people wish that we do not contain, we do not link this broad macro SDF, which is a macro policy, with a micro recordal of land rights in the land use schemes. I think our policy position is that there must be direct linkage between both the land use scheme and SDFs. We think it's possible. We think the land use schemes, and that's what we prescribe in this piece of legislation, that land use schemes must practically give effect to land use. Land use schemes must give effect to SDFs. This is what the Municipal Systems Act says. This is what we are saying, and this is consistent with the policy objectives in this regard. There are concerns around the composition of municipal planning tribunals also. Sardana Bay feels that councillors should not be excluded from municipal planning tribunals. Honourable Members, Chair, we've stated that our policy position is one which proposes that councillors take charge of policy positions, approve SDFs, approve land use schemes, for day-to-day land development decisions around whether approval should be given to build something or a mall should be approved, or you want to change the use of your land, consolidation, subdivision, removal of restrictions, and all those issues should be dealt with by officials and non-officials appointed by the council working within the policy approvals of the politicians. If there is a development application which is contrary to an approved policy position, there are avenues in this bill that should be approved by the politicians themselves. So if the politicians have said that in terms of SDF or in terms of the land use schemes, this is what they see the development trajectory of the municipality to record, this area is zoned industrial, if you want to depart from those policy approvals, what we are saying is that that should go back to the politicians, because it's an amendment to policy. But when it is consistent with the policy, it should be matters dealt with by a tribunal appointed or officials under the supervision of the politicians. Of course, we'll be guided by the committee as to the wisdom of our policy proposal, but we're saying that this is what we prefer. Some people are saying that it will occasion additional financial burden on municipalities. We do not necessarily think if you balance the speed and efficiency and the transparency of a municipal planning tribunal and the kind of operations we envisage, and politicians sitting on day-to-day decisions of this sort, we will not have better reasons to support the municipal planning tribunal. We have proposed that a minimum of 3 tribunal members should consider an application. We have also said that certain types of applications will be decided by officials. So we do not necessarily agree that a municipality having a team of 5 members of tribunal will necessarily be expensive. Most of these are not fully employed on a day-to-day by the municipalities. Apart from the officials, who in any event are paid salaries by the municipalities, the 2 or 3 additional members of the municipal planning tribunals will be people who will be paid daily allowance for sitting on the municipal planning tribunal. And even for smaller municipalities, what the bill is proposing is that 2 or more municipalities may agree to set up a joint tribunal. So it will end up reducing costs. But if you balance this against the possibility of politicians themselves, who we do believe, unless we are told otherwise, that politicians are busy with so many other things, to then on a day-to-day basis consider land development applications, we do not think that that is an appropriate move. On the question of internal appeals, I think the question that we will then, based on this comment, submit to the committee to guide us further is whether the decision-making of a municipality should be limited to one level. When an applicant makes an application to an official in a municipality or to a municipal planning tribunal, should there be a right of appeal to another level? I think that's the ultimate decision. Some people feel that the internal appeal is not worthwhile. What we've done is that we do not think Section 62 is appropriate. So we've inverted Section 62 of the Systems Act and created a slightly modified internal appeal process. We consider that we may need to have a rethink in this area, especially that some provinces are thinking that you may need to set up intermunicipal appeals, or you may need to create alternative bodies to hear appeals outside of a municipality. I must just say that we have our own concern as a department as to the wisdom of a municipality taking a decision and what is being presented to the committee as an independent appeals body. What, in effect, we will be having is a set of private developers who will sit in judgment over a municipality decision. I think as a department we can share the experience with the Development Facilitation Act and the Development Tribunals with you. What has happened is that in terms of the DFA itself, and while some people are so much in love in the provinces that where they have implemented DFA, why they are so much in love with the DFA and why even the efforts at ensuring that the DFA remain, and even the question of the extension of the Constitutional Court deadline was so vigorously pursued by some people, is the fact that in terms of the DFA, development tribunals are appointed by the Premier. These development tribunals are not government officials. They are largely private developers. We know, and we can, I think most of the people who have sat on tribunals or who still are members of tribunals in some of these provinces will attest to the fact that Sunday sits on the tribunal as a tribunal chairperson today. Is a town planner in private practice. Paul sits on the tribunal tomorrow. Paul and Sandy are friends. Today I bring an application to the same tribunal, Paul is presiding. Tomorrow I sit on the same tribunal and I bring an and Paul brings an application. To that extent, we have not and we will not be able to restructure the use of our space because it is more private developer-led development that we've been doing. If you look at the records of this important House of Parliament as to when the Development Facilitation Act was passed, I think the debates will tell you how the Development Facilitation Act was passed to do the construction and development, to assist in housing, to do very lofty goals of the new democratic government. But in reality, in many of these provinces, DFA has been used to do golf estates, to do malls, to do very high-brow development. Because the developers who sit on this tribunal, the developers who bring these applications, are the supposed independent private practitioners who understand development better than those who sit in government. And in effect, they've literally privatized the public function. Now, what we're now hearing again is that let municipalities take a decision, but this parliament must approve that there should be an appeal body composed of people who are not officials, who are not government, who are nobody in government, but who are these same private developers, to sit in judgment over the appeal, over the decisions of a democratically elected municipality. Our policy proposal is that that is not sufficient. It is not sufficient because we then know that in all instances, if that route is taken by this parliament, what will in effect happen is that all decisions of municipalities will go on review to this independent appeal tribunal, and that they will in almost all cases either overturn the decisions of the municipalities or do it the way they've been doing it in terms of the DFA. We know very well that some people have told us that while the DFA has been declared unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court, we must not throw the baby out with the bathwater. They are saying to us that some very good things about the DFA, they really want the DFA back. I think we may unwittingly be undermining municipalities if we agree to this proposal that we should create this independent appeal tribunal. And we've contested this definition of independence, that the fact that you are employed in government doesn't necessarily mean that you are less independent, or what is the independence meant? What does it mean practically? Is it a subterfuge for saying that we don't trust government, but we trust people who sit outside of government? Is it a question of why don't we say exactly the way it is? So we're saying that we contest the question of internal appeals and the questioning around it. Schedule 2 to the bill, of course, Schedule 2 to the bill was questioned. Schedule 2 lists scheduled land use policies, purposes. And I think what is important about Schedule 2 to the bill is that it only refers to land use policies before you have a land use kit, or if a land is not particularly zoned for a particular use. So Schedule 2 is only important if you do not have a land use scheme, and Schedule 2 will fall away if you have a land use scheme. So it's only for the benefit of those who do not have schemes. There was also another comment from Mr. Salter and Sand. He It's about time frames. We've already addressed the question of time frames. The question of exemptions from other pieces of legislation. We're saying that we cannot grant exemptions to other pieces of legislation. It's not within our power to. We know that some people do not like environmental impact assessment. I think that's a matter that should be dealt with in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. Consolidation of land. I think in terms of this bill, consolidation, subdivision of land is perfectly a land development application, and it should be brought within. We do not see any reason why it should be excluded as part of a land development application. The Bill of Laws, we have already dealt with this issue, but what we're saying is that we will be proposing further amendments to transitional measures in terms of this bill, and maybe subject to your guidance, we want to restate what we stated on the question of the Bill of Laws. There's also the comments from Itikwini Metropolitan Council in KZN. The first issue raised by Itikwini is that Section 62 of the system that provides for an internal appeal process. We have also, in terms of this bill, dealt with internal appeals. We have not, an internal appeal dealt with Section 51, Clause 51 of this bill. What they are saying is that we have not expressly excluded Section 62, and it may amount to foreign shopping for those who want to pursue Section 62 of the Systems Act and also Clause 51 of this bill. We think there is a lot of merit to this argument, and we will propose amendments, if it's fine with the committee, to strengthen the possible loophole in this area. We've already dealt with the question of municipal planning tribunal, except to say that this bill does not say all applications should go to a municipal planning tribunal. It provides for the municipal council establishing a municipal planning tribunal or allowing officials to deal with certain types of applications. There is also a concern raised by Itikwini that this bill is not sufficiently linked to a provincial legislation. In the course of our engagement with Itikwini, one of the things they've raised is that if there is a Planning and Development Act in KwaZulu-Natal and there is a Special Planning and Land Use Management Act at national level, they are saying that an applicant will be able to bring two types of application, one in terms of the Planning and Development Act of KZN, and the other one in terms of the national legislation. We do not believe that this reading is correct. Clause 10 of the bill is very clear that you are talking about the same subject. Clause 10 of the bill talks to provincial law which are consistent with this piece of legislation. We can consider the possibility of strengthening Clause 10 of the bill to ensure that we address a possible concern they have. But we're not saying that. I think if a cumulative reading of sections 4, 5, 9, and 10 of the bill and the space we have provided for provincial legislation does not lead us to agree entirely with the province that we need any special linking provision with provincial law, but we can do that. They are saying that no accompanying regulations. Chair, honorable members, it is correct. We cannot finalize regulations until the bill is passed into a piece of legislation, but what we have done, we've got a very draft, advanced draft of regulations. We're willing to release that for public comments soon. We're just worried about releasing regulations when the bill itself is subject to amendment. But we have some draft regulations that we can share. I think there's also a comment around this framework legislation. I think we've addressed it in the course of our previous engagement with this House. Some people feel that this legislation is framework, it's vague. Some people feel it is too comprehensive and too prescriptive. It's been a bit of a delicate exercise to then say which is the middle ground. We think it contains sufficient details to allow effective participation by the other spheres, and that we do not think we have overstepped our bounds, and we will still retain the principle that this is a framework legislation. Transitional measures have been prepared. We also have draft guidelines and draft measures for engaging with transitioning into this piece of legislation. And I will also publish that to assist those who will be making a transition to the implementation of this legislation. The question of development charges for environmental goods, it's a worthwhile concern. It's something that we have a lot of sympathies with. As we have stated, we cannot turn this bill into a money bill, and we cannot talk about the imposition of levies and charges. So to that extent, it's something that we will leave to the wisdom of National Treasury as they seek to finalize policy on development charges. The Queen also raised the question of intermediate plans. I think beyond Section 21(1) Roman 1 of the bill, I think when we look at Clause 7, 8, I think there are a lot of provisions, especially those dealing with special development frameworks or land use schemes. I think if you look at Clause 12, it allows for preparation of lower level plans, as they suggested. So we agree that there should be intermediate plans. What we're saying is that we do not want to over-prescribe. What we've done in the bill is to create the avenue for municipalities who truly are interested in creating plans that sits between the SDF of a municipality and the land use scheme. And we do agree even ourselves as a department. We do assist municipalities with doing precinct plans. And a precinct plan is one of those plans that sits between a land use scheme and a special development framework. So we agree with the principle of intermediate plans. The question of traditional areas, I think this remains a challenge. The question has been raised whether this bill is sufficiently flexible as to understand the complexity of land use management in areas under traditional leadership or in our rural areas. We do believe that the bill is one that is applicable in both our urban and rural spaces. We concede that because of some of the other challenges which goes beyond land use management, the non-resolution of the tenure issues, the absence of cadastral information, absence of special data sets, and a couple of issues, the planning in rural areas is a little bit more complex. It cannot be fully addressed in this bill. One of the things we're committing ourselves to doing, the province of KZN have actually done some initial work also around trying to understand the complexity of management and regulation of land in rural areas. At the national level, we also want to commission a study that will then assist us in advising the minister to probably put in place guidelines for management and regulation of land use in rural areas. We cannot do beyond that at the moment, and we'll be guided by yourselves. But we do believe that we have enough provisions in this bill that will authorize the bill to cater for the complexities of land use management in rural areas. Capacitating process. I think the comment of the Queen is noted. It's agreed to. It's just that the question of capacity cannot be fully addressed in this bill. When in this bill we have proposed the question of joint municipal planning tribunals or joint land schemes or the provisions dealing with intergovernmental support, it's all with a view to capacitating municipalities. I've already addressed the question of guidelines for implementation. We're working on something. We have a very advanced draft that we can share even at this stage. There is a question around conflict in legislation, and specific reference has been made to the National Building Regulations and Standards Law, to NEMA. I think these two pieces of legislation regulate entirely different subjects. We have provisions in the bill dealing with alignment of authorizations, and we must say that in some states in Australia, for instance, they've attempted to make laws on land use and environmental issues, even heritage, combined in one piece of legislation. The ideal piece of legislation is one in which a developer or anybody having a land use application has one shop where you drop all your applications. You don't need to go to EIA in this office. You go for heritage application in this office. All the other approvals from different offices. I think the constitutional allocation and distribution of powers in this country is a little bit different. Environmental powers are differently located. And whilst hopefully in some near future, we must continue to explore the means of bringing this piece of legislation together. We cannot say that when you want to make a mining application, go to a municipality. You still have to go the route to make a mining application there. You still have to go agriculture there. So we're just saying that we do not see them as conflict. we've attempted to create space for alignment of this. If there are appeals, depending on what the applicant is appealing on, the appeals in respect of each of these will be dealt with in respect of the empowerment legislation. Chair, honorable members, the Legal Resources Center also made written comments to yourself, and they also came to address this house. The Legal Resources Center raised questions around failure to include, to adequately deal with alternative development paradigms. They dealt with the question of the rural complexity. They speak to participatory mechanisms. They spoke to the question of customary law and how this bill has given or not given effect to customary law. They spoke to the fact that we have not prioritized rural communities. They also had issues around tenure issues. They mentioned the PIRA. They spoke to absence of CLARA or inadequacy of laws in these areas to assist. I think it's important to say that whilst we do understand the complexity of the issues in the rural space, and I think as planners we also wish to ensure that the rural areas are not subjected to a continuing planning system which is not helpful, which is not sustainable in the long run. The reality is that the mandate of spatial planning and land use management will continue to robustly seek out to address its own mandate or its own issues, as well as getting informed by tenure issues and other issues that affect land use management. This is not a land reform legislation. It's not exclusively on tenure. I think the department is busy with other pieces of legislation on tenure and land reform to address the, some of the kind of issues that Legal Resources Center are raising around tenure security for people on communal land. We think we've dealt sufficiently with the question of participatory mechanisms for communities. We concede that we cannot totally deal with customary law in this piece of legislation. We have not in any event excluded the rules of customary law in any areas. We ourselves continue to promise that we will do research and we'll see how to strengthen our regulatory mechanisms on the question of management of rural land. The Legal Resources Center also raised issues around development principles, the question of principle of sustainability. They raised questions around administrative justice. They had particular interest in respect of mining land. I think some of these issues goes beyond the purview of this piece of legislation. Whilst we recognize the validity of some of the issues raised by the Legal Resources Center, we must just confess that spatial planning and land use management does not necessarily extend to some of these issues that Legal Resources Center are inviting us to consider at this stage. Yet, we are saying that the department that we belong to the extent that some of these matters are within its mandate, we are also busy with that. And at the appropriate time, the parliaments will be approached on laws dealing with tenure, on laws dealing with issues of mining in communal areas.
Mr. Ogurund,
yes,
I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your surname correctly, but I think I'm better than the chairperson. I'm looking at the document, I'm looking at the members, you know, there's time where we start losing concentration properly. And I think that this document is very important. And the members are supposed to ask questions of clarity and engage with your presentation. Can I ask you, because I've realized that you have this document that talks to the same issues. You talk and summarize, and members will be able to engage, because I'm looking at the time. We have plenary and members have to get to other issues. Can you try and let me give you at least 5 minutes to try and wrap up, because I'm looking at it, we are still very far. We are not even next to page 10 of the document. Can I ask you to do that, please?
Chair, may I propose to look at a shorter presentation of 10 pages?
That's why I was asking whether we should go into the bigger document or this shorter one, and I'm sorry if I've spent too much time already. So if you allow me, I'll just quickly refer to the closed out issues in the PowerPoint presentation, which is about 10 pages, 10 slides.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say, because I realize that you can bypass members of parliament when it comes to talking.
Thank you. Chair, if that's the case, then most of the issues are almost dealt with, but I will just spend 1 minute on each of the slides. I think there are cluster of issues around appeals, and I've stated that we've already gone through almost the issues on appeals in the COJ presentation. On the question of decision-making bodies, I think the decision that needs to be taken is around the role of councillors. We've dealt with the exclusion of councillors, issue of traditional leaders, and I think I've already dealt with this. Some people are saying that it should not include external members. Some are saying it should include external members. Our proposal is that we should have a mix. I think on the repeal of laws, I've also dealt with that. Transitional provision. Chair, we have touched on it a little bit. We concede that the transitional provisions in the bill are inadequate. We will make proposal, if you allow us, at the appropriate time when you're looking at clause by clause, to strengthen the transitional provision in the bill. I think that's clause 60 of the bill. But we're also saying that some of the issues that are being raised around transitional provisions are matters to be dealt with in provincial pieces of legislation. I think I've dealt with the question of interface with provincial pieces of legislation already, around what will be defined by provincial legislation and the need for to read these two legal regimes together, the national and the provincial legislation. There's one that I've probably not dealt with, is the legal status of SDFs. I think we touched on it a little bit. There are quite a number of concerns. The Municipal Systems Act, Section 2060, was the first to introduce the concept of special development frameworks. It specifically links it with the principles in the Development Facilitation Act. An SDF is a policy document. It's a special expression of the development plan of a municipality. Now, if we look at SDFs, it basically says that you want to build roads, you want to build schools, you want to do all these things, but how do we see all these things in space? So it not only just lists all the projects in the IDP, it talks to you about the locational quality of those kind of projects. Why do you want to build a school here? It's linked to the question of population. Why do you want to build health facilities? Is it a primary health or is it a big hospital? It's all these kind of decisions we make and the locational quality of these decisions. Some people are now saying to us that don't use SDF, don't make it mandatory. I think they are inviting us to continue an unplanned and chaotic settlement trajectory. So we're saying that the land use schemes must be located in a context that gives effect to a special development framework. So we do not agree. People are saying that these SDFs are likely to confuse. You have a municipal SDF, you have a provincial SDF, you have a national SDF. We do not think so. Chair, they operate at different scales. A municipal SDF is far more detailed. It shows sits within a municipality. A provincial SDF, like a provincial plan, it sits at a broader scale. A national one does not see micro, where do you build a school in certain instances, but it talks to bigger and broader development issues. So we do not necessarily see them as conflicting, but it creates an avenue for robust engagement of how these three spheres in an interrelated and an intercoordinated manner gives expression to their plans at the three spheres. Some people are saying long-term horizon, 20 years. We agree. We do believe that SDF should look at 10, 20 years vision. What we are saying is a question of review. People are saying we're elevating it to the status of law. So be it. That's what our proposal is. We have need to include SDF guidelines. We cannot have SDF guidelines in a piece of legislation. The bill already authorized the minister to do that, and it will be that. There is need for obligatory criteria. So far, we have used a software tool to invite municipalities and to assist municipalities to develop more credible SDFs. I think I'm confusing myself. think it's the same page.
Yeah.
I think, Chair, that's largely what you have. I think what I just wanted to state on the last slide, what we want to put forward on the last slide, when we say selected activities supportive of the implementation of the legislation, if you pass it, is that some of the questions and some of the comments are legitimate concerns to the extent that you do not see the full picture in the bill. The bill itself cannot give you the full picture. Our minister is authorized to make guidelines. Some people are imagining where is the guideline itself. Because if we had seen the guideline, we'll be able to understand how the minister will exercise his powers. They want to see the regulation. So we're just confirming that, because we also recognize the fact that the law reform in this exercise will be incomplete unless there are provincial pieces of legislation. We are very active ourselves as national government, working with 6 provinces. We are paying for 5 provincial legislation. They are doing their laws, but we keep a very close relationship with those provinces. We're working with Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Free State, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. Northwest is the only area where they have a piece of old bill that we're again meeting with them tomorrow to look at this bill to say, how do we synchronize with the national law? Western Cape is sufficient. They have been engaged in their own robust engagement processes to enact the provincial law. KZN has a piece of legislation. They've produced some very lengthy piece of amendments to their piece of legislation, and we hope that they will try to synchronize it. Housing is also busy with a bill. So when we see all these provincial laws, I will then see a better picture. We're also saying that some of the capacity issues, already we can give a picture of what the capacity challenges across the country are. Where are the planners, where are the GIS skills? It's not complete, but we are expediting our work so that by next month we can give a total picture of where the challenges are, and then we can start the process of engaging municipalities on if Parliament passes this law, how will they see it implemented in readiness for the implementation. We already have draft regulations for Sploma. We have not released it. We are in a position to release it in the next coming days. Same thing goes for the guidelines on interim and transitional measures. And with these guidelines, it will then deal with the question of how do you move from ordinances to this new law? How do you move from a BCDA to this law? How do you deal with the remnants of DFA going to this new piece of legislation? We have that already covered in a research document and in a set of guidelines that we hopefully will issue once the bill is near finalization. We have guidelines for development of municipal SDFs already that has been in use in the past 4 years or so. What we are also working on is to upscale these guidelines to be able to cover our development of regional special development framework, national special development framework, and provincial special development frameworks. We are also very busy working on the land development applications manual, so that for the use of officials, for the use of tribunals, for the use of members of the public, you want to lodge an application in Eastern Cape, how do you do that? You want to lodge an application in Princeton, how do you do that? Where do you go to? What are the documents we file? Those kind of details. So we want a detailed manual for practitioners and non-practitioners alike. And we are very sure that before this bill is finalized this year, we will have a very advanced draft of this manual. Because of the need, and we ourselves have recognized that in terms of this bill, minister needs to publish a set of criteria that will be applicable to the exercise of the minister's power in terms of clause 51 of this bill. We've also decided to, clause 52 rather of the bill. We are then commissioning some exercise to define what is national interest, in what circumstances do you invoke national interest, what are the limitations to the powers of ministers to do national interest, how will the municipality know when to take an application that is in national interest to the minister. How will the minister himself be able to know that this application before a municipality in Saldanha is one that he needs to invoke national interest? How do you ensure that the minister does not abuse this power? How do you ensure that the question of promotion of administrative justice and all those things are dealt with? We also are working on guidelines for precinct plans, and that talks to the kind of comments from Mr. Queenie that you need to do intermediate plans between your SDS and land use schemes. We already, I think this financial year, we'll probably doing over 28 prison plans across different areas of the country. A prison plan is a more detailed plan that assists in saying how do you alter the character or how do you improve the character of a particular space. So it's smaller, it's probably a ward or smaller than a ward in some instances. We're also doing the same thing on land use schemes, so that we do not just leave municipalities to go and do land use schemes. Our experience as government in the past years is one that reveals that when we said municipalities should do SDFs, for instance, in terms of the Systems Act, many municipalities commissioned SDFs. The quality was not more than the document that it was written on. There was no public consultation. It was a shelf item. Municipalities complied with it. They ticked the box, and they were fine. The Integrated National Special Information Management System, we already have something running in Free State and Northern Cape. We recognize the centrality of special information to development planning, and we are hoping that we can use this system to assist municipalities to better plan. We've also commissioned some work, and we've already looked at some prototypes of how do we institute an electronic land use management system so that if you sit in Cape Town, can you lodge an application in Pretoria without necessarily going to Pretoria? And then if there is a need to hear the application physically, maybe you need to go there, almost like what our colleagues in DITA are doing with ICADA, so that we can do electronic lodgement of land use applications, and then when you need a formal hearing, you can visit it. These are some of the activities we're engaged with at national level right now, and it's just a just selected ones. It's not all work to do to ensure that we are ready for the implementation of this piece of legislation. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, there's a presentation from the department. Can we engage with it? Honorable Trollip.
Chairperson, when I listened to the presentation, I couldn't help but think how this process has been enriched by retrieving this from the NCOP a few months ago when it was about to be passed through the NCOP, because the public hearings have obviously enriched this legislation. There are some undertakings by the department where the department still says they will provide and they will provide X, Y, and Z. I've made a note of all of these issues and put a big question mark about when. For example, it says regarding Etiquini, the appeal process, this section requires review. The department will make a submission with recommended changes. Now, that suggests that there has been some enrichment of this process, which I think is what we're here to do. So I'd like to give the department the recognition and the respect that they have considered the submissions, which is good. Chair, there are one or two questions that come out of the presentation, and you know, one or two of comments or questions. First of all, I understand that the issue around time frames, and Mr. Ogunronbe explained a whole lot of the constraints around having specified time frames in the regulations or in the legislation. But in the absence of time frames, you do not have a situation where you can actually ensure that development applications are processed. So we must have some time frames. You can't have a situation where you say we'll consider them on a case-by-case basis, because that, to me, just doesn't make sense. So I'd need some more explanation, convincing explanation about that. I'd like to ask the department whether they believe that they should be the sole sponsor of this legislation, and that should COCTA not have responsibility, at least with regard to the sponsoring of this legislation. And then the alignment of the MSA and SPLUM needs a lot of work to be done still, and the department has made some undertakings in that regard, and we look forward to having that alignment. I really don't buy the argument too much about, you know, provinces lamenting that councils have been given too much authority and councils lamenting that provinces have been given too much authority, because all we want is actually coordination, integration, recognition of relevant responsibilities and authority, and then that all the spheres of government know exactly where their responsibility lies. And this piece of legislation needs to clarify that unambiguously. With regard to the DFA and some people's effusive support for its retention, I understand that vested interests were obviously driving the support for the DFA. But there was a comment there about private sector growth led economic growth. There's nothing wrong with private sector economic led growth. The state is a developmental state or wants to become a developmental state, but it needs to develop in conjunction with the private sector. So the legislation needs to take that into account as well. And lastly, Chair, the issues around the Legal Resource Center. I don't think the departmental response adequately covers the concerns of the Legal Resource Center and the concerns that this portfolio committee will have with regard to rural or communal land and the rights of users of rural or communal land. And I think the department would have to go, as far as I'm concerned, to go a bit further than supplying that response, because it doesn't adequately speak to the concerns, very relevant concerns, that are raised by the Legal Resource Center.
Are you done, Honourable Member? Honourable Tolis, are you done?
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Okay, thank
Sorry.
You. Honorable Mwenga Mavir and Honorable Ntambane Wilful.
Chair, firstly, to appreciate the progress that has been made by the department in accommodating some of the comments that has been raised by various stakeholders. But I want just to check under Isandla Institute. You have said that the comment has been noted. You just noted, or it has been noted, it will be considered, because under the right of appeal, you've said it is noted for consideration. So the other one, Chair, I think the legal advisor of Parliament and also the state law advisors will assist also in looking at this document in detail, so that when we meet, we get the full legal advice based on the comments, on the responses by the department, and also on the research findings. I think that one will assist us a lot. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson, unfortunately, against my will, I was never a part of public hearings. So I am getting this document as well, sitting here in this meeting now. It is very informative. It's a one-page document. So I was taking my questions as the presenter was going down with the presentation. So the request I'm having now is, I've got two questions, because as I'm saying, I was never part of the hearing, and I'm seeing it for the first time, so I was just putting them down as it goes down with the presentation. So the request I'm having now is, because my request is based on the fact that they still have to make further submissions and recommendations. That is what is contained in this document. So what I want to find out now is, can't, therefore, I go down through the presentation and put my questions and submit them to the committee secretary to forward my questions to the department, so that when they make recommendations, they also answer those questions. I'll put the two questions I have. Actually, one of the directors touched in one of the questions I was going to put to them. Okay, let me go to this question. It's in page 2. It's about time frame. You have said here that there is a draft regulation. Does that draft regulation have any proposal about time frame? Because really, as Honorable Trump has said, we cannot leave it open-handed. Open-ended, I'm sorry. Does that draft regulation have proposals about time frames? And then my other question is, second question, and the last one is in page 5. The City of Johannesburg, that repeal of laws column. Have you identified any national laws that really need to be repealed as the department, except, giving time for provinces to make their repeals. Have you identified any of laws that need to be repealed as the department? Because really we don't have to keep laws that are no longer applicable in this present scenario. At the same time, we don't have to repeal laws and then we leave ourselves with vacuum. Have you identified any of such laws that need to be repealed? If I'm allowed, I will write down other questions and hand them to the Secretary of the Committee.
No, it's allowed, Honorable Member.
Any other questions?
Mr. Oburumbi, can you respond if possible?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the comments. The question of time frames, what they're saying is that in some pieces of legislation, I will look at a draft, signing the draft they're working with in the Free State now. It says one application must be decided within 180 days. Maybe my colleagues will also assist me with they kind of break down how planning decisions practically manifest themselves. Conditions of establishment are attached to a decision. People appeal. There are objections. Documents are filed, almost in the nature of a legal process, like you find in courts. Now, ideally, you truly want to say 180 days for all these things to be done. But we're saying that you also want to look at the scale of the application. You want to look at the type of application. So if you are building a single building or you want to approve a 10,000 square meters kind of a multimodal development, you cannot have a one type of style. So we concede that it is desirable to have time frames. What the draft regulations is proposing is a further framework for determining the time frames itself. But the minister will then say, based on either research or engagement, we consult with, let's say in housing, for instance, we publish a set of possible dates and the kind of activities and the time limits within which those activities must be done. So we're not just saying that all land use decisions must be 180 days, but we're saying that rezoning of this kind of scale, maybe you must make sure that if you receive the application, a decision is taken whether to accept or reject the applications within certain days. If the tribunal considers the application, it must spend not more than how many hearings, or an adjournment for the consideration of a rezoning application must not be taken more than 3 times, so that you don't keep adjourning the case, or a single adjournment must not be more than 4 weeks. Those are the kind of nuanced kind of analysis that we want to put into putting time frames, because there are so many activities that forms part of the whole process, so that you do not say 180 days and that in all instances, because we also engage with this issue at NEDLAC, and we must say that it is indeed desirable in the interest of development that there are time frames. But what you may have, if you look at Section 10 of this bill, is a scenario where people say that, tell us upfront, if a municipality fails to take a decision within the time frame, what will happen? And I'm sorry to suspect, because it may be speculative and unnecessary, but if you look at the kind of push that is saying that puts time frames to it, it's one that almost invariably will make a municipality, most municipalities will not comply. Then it gives you a default right of appeal to a body that the developers in any event want to take an application. So we must be careful so that we do not put in place proposals that we know that we're setting up the primary decision maker, we're setting them up for failure. And that's what we've been invited to do in some instances. That we're saying that, no, you know these municipalities don't have capacity. Why don't you just say it up front in a piece of legislation that if a municipality, if they fail to take a decision in 60 days, it must go to the province, or it must go to this independent appeal tribunal. And those are the kind of things we're saying that we may face constitutional challenges. When a municipality says that you have been over-prescriptive, and you have not taken this kind of time frame in relation to the peculiarities of my municipality. And those are the kind of nuanced considerations that we're putting into it. So indeed, I concede that we probably haven't explained ourselves sufficiently well, but we're just saying that the whether in terms of the regulations or in terms of the bill itself, a single time frame which doesn't look at the differences in types of application, which doesn't look at the scales of the application, which doesn't look at the, even the local peculiarities in that case. In some cases, people bring senior counsels to come and argue land development issues before development tribunals. Some of these people seek adjournments, they cite all the relevant provisions of the law and cases, and some of these tribunal members are either retired magistrates or somebody doesn't even have a proper legal training. It holds up development decisions. And what we're saying is that, can we afford any decision where we do not put sufficient supporting mechanisms in place, sufficient learnings in place to improve the efficiency of the process, and we simply just put a time frame? Well, we know these municipalities do not comply. Then it takes them to this so-called independent appeal tribunal, which is composed of people that are already up to a particular that see development in a way not consistent with how the municipalities itself see the development. Should the department be the sole sponsor of this piece of legislation? I think the question is a good one. With respect, Chair, as a department, we have worked, I think in the memo to cabinet, and I don't know whether in the object memo accompanying the bill, we have not stated that the bill, indeed after the Constitutional Court judgment, I think if we look at the, I'm just trying to confirm if it's not in the object memo. Especially after the Constitutional Court judgment, this bill is a product, I think clause 7 of the bill to an extent, clause 7 of the objects memo deals with that. We're saying that the department has worked closely with the presidency, the planning commission, and ensuring, in finalizing the bill, we other departments, including cooperative governance, human settlements, environmental affairs, have been part of it. We can confirm to this portfolio committee that the department has worked very closely, not just that we have consulted. We have worked very closely with a key set of departments within the auspices of both an interdepartmental committee and also at a ministerial level. We've had an interministerial committee chaired by Minister Manuel that has almost since 2010 led to the production of this bill. So whilst we are the sponsoring department, we have worked very closely with other departments in taking this bill to where it is at the moment. It has not been a sole product of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. But like most bills, a bill will be managed by one department, and that has been the case here. We can confirm that in most of our meetings, we've carried our colleagues in cooperative governance along, colleagues in human settlements, National Planning Commission, and many of them. Provinces and municipal interaction. I think we want to restate, and we still stand by the comment that this bill is one where, depending on who one speaks to, people almost bring legal arguments, or they color their personal preferences or their official preferences with constitutional color sometimes, and then tell you that you have given too much power to municipalities. And it is correct that this bill should lead in that clarity of defining the relationship between spheres. With respect, we think we've done that. Municipal planning remains where it is, constitutionally, in terms of the judgment of the Constitutional Court. We've listened to very important arguments around how, because we all play on the same piece of land, we cannot exclude other spheres. I mean, there were very sophisticated arguments that were advanced by counsel in the Maxan case, for instance, why a municipality should not sit on should not take decisions on mining land, which effectively amounts to a veto of a national competence on mining. The court rejected those arguments. What we are saying is that I think, late barely, the argument here is that we've given too much power to the municipalities, and we do not agree because we think we've given effect to the constitution. So we'll be guided by yourself as to how we can produce that more clarity. But we think when we did Chapter 3 on intergovernmental support and monitoring, it's exactly to do that. So to assist in that clarity, and we think we've done that. On the question of DFA and whether private sector growth, I think my contention was not about having a problem with private sector involvement and even leadership in growth. But in respect of land development, if we look at our objectives, if we look at the history of this country about spatial injustice, about restructuring the use of our space, about resources and how they play on land, what you will find and what has been happening is that if you take the relationship between work and home, for instance, we're saying that it's a prime government objective for the poor to live closer to where they work. There are studies that are saying that this country is one of the highest in terms of the percentage of income of the poorer person used on transportation to places of work. Invariably, government will have to spend more on transportation costs. People wake up at 4 a.m. in order to go and work in the city at 7 o'clock. If you want to do your spatial planning and land use planning properly, you are then saying that government must be able to create a climate where the poorer people can also have a space to live closer to places of work. But we can, through zoning schemes alone, build the most expensive houses closer to the city. And the poorer, because they cannot afford land closer to the city, are confined to the periphery. You take an average city in South Africa, the townships are located outside at the outskirts. The core of the city is your CBD, and the richer you are likely to spend less on transportation. The poorer you are likely to live further away from the city. And we say that if we have to do integration, it is not likely that in the absence of government policy, the private sector will be so willingly be keen to build low-cost housing. I think there are international examples to that. So we are saying, if you want to do this, that's what DFA has been used for, and that's the point I was trying to make, that if we do not address some of those issues here, you will have a situation where these private, independent people who want to sit in this independent appeal tribunals continue to seize the avenue for decision-making, promote the interest of profit over interest of people and those kind of integration issues. And that's why I'm saying that DFA has been used to build golf estates, to build high-brow housing developments, to do your resort. And that's the kind of development that DFA has been used for, as opposed to the reconstruction and development. And we are saying that we must be careful for this bill not to be hijacked, to relegate those public interest issues to the background, and people then promote this private interest in the name of supposedly neutral terminologies like independent appeal tribunals. And that's the point I'm making, but I'm not against private sector involvement in this growth. I think we would have a look at the Legal Resources Center comments as to whether we can. But what we're just trying to point out that we do concede that some of the issues raised by Legal Resources Center are indeed very important issues. Some of them, of course, go beyond the purview of this piece of legislation, and that's what we're saying. If they want us to create a sector on mining goes beyond the sector. Every sector, agriculture would then say create a chapter on agriculture, create a chapter on transport. Land use implicates so many sectors. It implicates transport, it implicates agriculture, it implicates agric. It's a multi-sectoral kind of thing. So we're just feeling that we will relook the comments and see whether we have not missed out on anything. On Isandla questions the mandate of the department. Isandla raises issues that are possible within the principles of this piece of legislation, in our view. They've raised the issue of sustainability. They've raised the issues of spatial justice. We've dealt with those issues at the level of principles. Some of the work, very important work done by Sandler with the rights, with the economic rights people, are things that we will take. I mean, if you take the impact of malls, for instance, how it promotes low income and the question of low income earners and rural people that they're talking about, those are detailed activities that we will ensure we do in SDFs, that we will ensure we do in prison plans, that we will ensure we do in lower level plans and not in the bill itself. But we think if we look at the five principles of justice, we would have dealt with that. I think the Bill of Laws.
Mr. Ogorombe, can you do it within 2 minutes? Honorable Ntapane was stopped because we have to take a decision as this committee. He has to go and consult the doctor. He's not well. And the members are all indicating that they are having other commitments outside this case.
Sorry, Jay. Thanks, David. I think we've addressed that. It's a, the repeal of laws. We may propose that we do lefty as additional piece in addition to what we've proposed here. But other laws will be provincial laws that will be repealed at provincial level. That's all, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. I would also like to propose that those that still have questions, can we do like Honorable Ntapane and then forward them to the committee secretary? We have to take a decision, honorable members, in light of the public hearings and the discussions today, the interaction of today, whether is it necessary for us to continue with provincial public hearings as a portfolio committee. We discussed once and agreed that we need to go to provinces so that we hold public hearings at provincial levels. Are we still of the view that we still need to undertake that? I'm putting it to the honorable members. Honorable Ntapane and Honorable Trolik.
First year, honorable chairperson, which type of bill is this? Is it 75, 75 or 76? That is, does it go to NCOP? Because if it does go, if it does go to NCOP, I don't think really it would be the right thing for us to go to provinces. If it does go to NCOP, that's my opinion.
Honorable Trolley.
Chair, the bill was originally incorrectly tagged, and that's why it was sent directly to the NCOP. So it does have national and provincial impact. And we've had submissions from major metro municipalities. We've had submissions from SALGA. And there is commonality across all those. I mean, there's certainly overlapping submissions from those organizations. The only concern, and I mean, it's very difficult to go and assess, and I think anyone in the department or any one of the members would agree that implementation of this legislation by some rural municipalities is going to be very difficult. But then you can argue that development application is not something they deal with every day. But we want to change that. We want to develop rural municipalities as well and prevent rural decay. So if we're going to do, and I don't believe that we need to go there because SALGA represents all municipalities, but if we do, we need to go maybe and identify one or two municipalities in those 23 presidential municipalities in the presidential development nodes and go and have a look there. But I don't believe it's absolutely necessary because they are represented. And I think Honorable Ntapane's point is apposite, that if the NCOP are going to take it to public hearings before final ratification, then maybe they should take it to identified municipalities.
Are we having a doubt? Honorable Ngwenya Mabila, are you coming to our rescue?
That is why initially I asked the tagging of this bill, because as Honorable Ntapane has indicated that if it's Section 76, I think the responsibility of the NCOP to make sure that all provinces are taken on board with regards to the bill. But better to say that, Chair, I think SALGA is representing all the municipalities. So to me, the comments made by SALGA, it covers the views of whether rural or urban municipalities. So I don't see any for us as members to go to provinces or to municipalities to conduct hearings on this bill.
So we are agreeing that there's no need to for us to have public hearings at provincial levels. Can I give Prince Zulu and Honorable Japani?
Thank you, Chair. My worry is that I never see the submission from the House of Traditional Leaders. I don't know whether it was any, although you are mentioning that the Salka presented the municipalities, but the House of Traditional is controlling a communal land, big land, but did we receive any from the house, from these houses all over the country? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for giving me the second bite. You know, even if we do want to go to provinces, I doubt if Parliament can allow us if this bill goes to NCOP. I really doubt if Parliament can allow us to do that.
Can you guide us, Chairperson?
Thank you, Chairperson. One, this bill has been tagged as a Section 76(1), meaning that the National Assembly can reject the... If it rejects the amendments from the NCOP, it goes for mediation, yes. And if that mediation fails, National Assembly can pass that piece of legislation with a two-third majority. Thank you. The committee is allowed to go to the provinces. Thank you. If it wants to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sayoji. I get a feeling that, okay, you can come, sir, and you'll follow me.
Thank you, Chief. It, the bill is a 76 bill, basically, so the committee conducted or held public hearings, basically. Now, it's in the discussion of the committee whether the committee wants to extend this process to provinces. But the NCOP will also have its own process and also have discussion whether it wants to extend it to the level of public hearings or public participation that it wants to conduct within that level. So it's totally up to the committee within the committee's discussion to deal with it. It is a 76 bill. The committee, the NCOP, will also have to consider the bill and propose amendments. And should there be amendments, it can come back to the committee for consideration, basically. And then the mediation process should get to that stage.
Ma'am? Yes, ma'am. I support what my colleague said. The bill is a 76 bill. The issue was not about the tagging, it was about which house it was to be introduced in. So it is within the discretion of the committee as to whether they want to hold public hearings, but the NCOP will follow its normal processes in terms of Section 76.
I think the committee is of the view that we don't need to go to provinces. Let's make it our resolution as a portfolio committee. We agreed, all members. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
One issue, please.
Something happened in the hearing, and I want to raise it. When the Western Cape had made their submission, and Mr. Ogunrombi said that he found it difficult to understand, and that's what made the process so difficult, because he was in possession of a letter from the mayor of the city of Cape Town, saying that she supported the legislation. Now, I just want to read a part of the letter. I place on record as background information that the city supports the proposed national development plan The city notes that there are certain obvious technical rectifications required, which is certain the state law advisors will see to give effect, due effect to this bill when enacted. The current local administration for the City of Cape Town is in agreement with the policy direction and approach adopted by the bill and fully supports the objects recommended in the memorandum of the bill. I suggest that Mr. Alvin Rombie pay attention, because attached to that letter are 20 pages of submission from the City of Cape Town that deal with concerns around specific issues in the legislation. So it was a bit mischievous, and I followed it up immediately when one element of government is making a submission for him to say it's very difficult to reconcile that because I have a letter of support from the minister, the mayor. The mayor supports the intention of the legislation, and I don't think anyone around this table doesn't. But you can't support legislation simply because some of the stuff you like. Because there's the stuff that's in the legislation that you don't like that makes it either good or bad legislation. So I want to place that on record. There's a 20-page submission that is not in the department's response, and I would like the department to take cognizance of the 20-page submission from the City of Cape Town too. Chair, is it a dialogue or we're in a meeting? Chair, I'd like to hear the gentleman's response on the microphone.
Can I propose, Honourable Trollip, that you submit the document to Mr. Okurumbi?
It was sent to him on the 25th of May with the letter that he referred to. To him and Mr. Rajesh McCann on the 25th of May.
Mr. Burundi?
Sure. With respect to the house, I was not referring to that letter. I'm referring to the letter from the mayor dated the 10th of August 22.
Chairperson, with respect, does that letter support the legislation without any concerns, or is the submission valid? Because the submission is valid.
Chair, we're starting to be confused now, because we thought that the report that has been presented to the committee is the report that consolidates all the submissions that were made. I don't know whether the one that Honourable Trollip is talking about was part of those submissions that were made on that particular day, because I left the meeting in the middle. But we can't entertain the submission of one stakeholder aside. If there's anything, I think even if the stakeholders have made submission, it depends on the department and also on their legal experts within the department to decide whether they accommodate those submissions or comment or not. But it doesn't mean that when you are making a submission in relation to the bill, those submissions must be considered. But I think after this meeting, I think Honorable Trollip has got the right to talk to. I'm not going to pronounce the surname because I don't know where to start.
Sunday.
I think Sunday is better to talk to Sunday with regards to that, because now it will be a dialogue between Mr. Trollip and Sunday, because Sunday has got his side of the story. Mr. Trollip has got another side of the story. I think we can't entertain this for now, but they can just communicate, then try to deal with that. Because we can't treat matters in different ways. If that submission is there, I think it's time for even Mr. Trollip to make it to Sunday, so that the department must take that into consideration, because this is not our last meeting with regards to this bill. We're still going to get some advice, as we've agreed initially, from the state law advisors and also from the parliament legal advisors. Thanks, Chair.
Can I suggest that, because I learned from the committee secretary that she never received the submissions from the Cape Metro, that Mr. Trollip, Honorable Trollip, indicate whether he is of the view that on the responses that were given by the department, there's no way that the submission from the Cape Metro are covered, or you specifically want the department to indicate that the mayor of Cape Town has made a submission, and even if it's covered, you want it to be corrected. Because I'm of the view that we have to conclude the meeting, and it's true that we are still going to continue with engagement on the bill, and we need to correct this misinterpretation of whatever it is that we go along with the bill as the department and the committee.
I'm 100% that we do that. I don't want any special dispensation for a submission. The submission wasn't sent to the committee secretary. I'll make sure she gets it immediately hereafter. The copy was sent during the public participation process to the department, addressed to Mr. Ogun Ronby and Mr. Rajesh McCann. It was sent on the 25th of May, so they should have it. And if they're responding to submissions made to the department, then it should be in the document that they just submitted today, unless that was only from verbal submissions. If it was only from verbal submissions, we'd like feedback then from written submissions from people who participated in the public. So I don't want any special dispensation, but there is a submission that was made to the department. The department must include it in its report to the committee.
I think that is the way it's supposed to go, and let's allow it to go the way, that way, and the meeting is adjourned.